Welcome to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat. Everyone, welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Our hot stove shows continuing from the ballpark as we get closer to some news from Goodyear, Arizona. We are less than 2 months away from the start of spring training for the Tribe out in Goodyear, as the first workout for the entire squad will be February the 24th. The equipment truck leaving in less than a month's time in early February, and that's when you know we're getting closer to some real baseball news for you. Good show lined up for you this week, a wide variety of subjects to talk about. We'll visit with the new Indians bullpen coach, the last member to be added to the coaching staff for the new season, and that's Jason Barre, former major league pitcher who has been in the Indians organization since 2005. In the front office, and now he moves back down into uniform and on the field as a part of Terry Francona's coaching staff. We'll also be joined by Bob DiBiasio, who has thoughts and memories of Hank Peters, the former club president for the Indians who passed away last weekend. And we'll hear from the Hall of Fame class of 2015, the election results announced earlier this week: John Smoltz, Randy Johnson, Craig Biggio, and Pedro Martinez, the class of 2015 to be enshrined in Cooperstown later this summer. We'll have that and much more as we get rolling with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend back at Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where we have turned the new year, and that means a little more activity here at the ballpark as the renovation project continues out in right field, albeit a little more slowly due to the frigid temperatures that we've had this week. But down below in the Indians clubhouse, the trainer's offices and other areas, various players coming in for checkups to see how their off seasons are going. And of course, later on in January, a good portion of the Indians roster will be here for Tribe Fest on January the 24th and 25th. And once again, the best place to get advanced tickets for that and all the information that you'll need is at Indians.com/Tribe Fest. In terms of hard baseball news for the Tribe this week, topping the list would be the naming of a new bullpen coach, that spot opening up when Kevin Cash was named manager of the Tampa Bay Rays back in December. Jason Barre, who has been in the organization quite some time, a former major league pitcher who has been a special assistant to the baseball operations department since 2005, he will now get back on the field in uniform as the Indians' new bullpen coach. The numbers on Barre in his major league career: 11 seasons in the major leagues, primarily with the Chicago teams, the Cubs and the White Sox. His overall major league record, 71-65, an ERA of 5.14, but an American League All-Star back in 1994 with the Sox, and won a combined 24 games back in 93-94 when he was really just breaking in with the White Sox. Also saw some time in the major leagues with the Indians, and then his entire post-playing career has been spent in the Indians front office as that special assistant to baseball operations. We had a chance to catch up with him earlier this week, talk to him about his new position as bullpen coach, and he says professionally it's a great opportunity for him, something he's been looking forward to, but he had to make sure it was the right time from a family standpoint.
Well, I think that's, you know, like you said, that's definitely the crucial part to it. The role that I was in, like you said, I was afforded the opportunity to be home and travel out to go visit the numerous teams, once or twice a month. So that part will be an adjustment, but, as we discussed before, having the opportunity to be part of a staff that's already in place that that I get along with, and we're pretty like-minded. I'm definitely looking forward to the opportunity.
How much of an impact do you think you can have working within that framework of Mickey Callaway being the pitching coach and Terry Francona as the manager from your angle out there in the bullpen? What do you think you can bring to aid this staff throughout the season?
Well, I think first and foremost would be, experiences. It's kind of just doing the similar job to what I was doing, but on a full-time basis. Being there as a sounding board and maybe a voice of reason through prior experiences that I've either had as a player or the past few years in the organization, evaluating some of our pitches in the minor league system. I have a relationship with pretty much all of these guys on the pitching side of things, whether it's one of these kids that's already in the big leagues that I've seen since A-ball, or, somebody that we've traded for like a Trevor Bauer and had relationships with him the past couple of years in the minor leagues. And being there the last two Septembers, I think, has really helped to see how things operate on a daily basis up at that level. Because it is different from playing and, now being on the staff. So there are some differences, but, I think I'm prepared for it and ready to do it.
And you look at the title and it's bullpen coach, but I think we saw with Kevin Cash that it can be much more than that if you wanted to. And you talked about working with Trevor Bauer. So yes, you spend the games out in the bullpen, but you really work with the whole staff, don't you?
Yeah, that's a credit to the staff, I think. There aren't any egos. Mickey and I have a great relationship. We've talked at length over the past couple of years about certain situations. And, like I said, that's a credit to him that, he doesn't have an ego. It's about getting the most out of the player and whatever resources you can use to have that happen. Everyone on the staff is willing to do that.
Jason Bray joining us, announced as Indians bullpen coach earlier this week. And Jason, you will be spending the games in the bullpen. And I know most bullpen coaches, they try and make sure that it's a good place and that the pitchers are ready to go when they are called upon. And do you have an idea on what type of tone you'd like to set out there during the games?
Well, luckily for me, it's a unit that's already in place, that's already up and running. It's had success, obviously, the past few years. So, if anything, it's more about me fitting into what they've already been doing. And having that balance of, there's different personalities out there and treating them as individuals, but, having them be a cohesive unit and pulling together, which I've witnessed firsthand the past couple of years. Like I said, this group of guys is already up and running and doing a great job of that.
11 seasons on the mound playing-wise as a pitcher in the major leagues, but it's been a while now that you've been in a coaching or evaluating position. How long does it take to really make that adjustment to be able to teach what you've learned over the years and had success with when you played?
Well, I think it's building a trust with each individual. Like I said, they have different personalities and some guys need to be reached a different way. Some guys want a lot of information. Some guys don't want as much. And that comes down to each individual. So I think with my personality and how I can relate to a player, it definitely helps with that scenario. So, like I said, it's a group that already does a great job of being ready physically and mentally. And, you know, I'm just there to make sure that the guys are already on track, stay on track, and, you know, when a guy is struggling with something, you know, being able to talk to him about certain things, you know, like I said, having experienced certain things in my career, good and bad, obviously.
That's new Indians bullpen coach Jason Bure. Stay tuned. When we return, we'll visit with Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio and get his thoughts on the passing last weekend of the man who played an important role in the Indians' great teams back in the 1990s. That's Hank Peters, the former Tribe president who passed away last weekend. We'll hear from Bobby D about the life and times of Hank Peters after this timeout on the Indians Radio Network. Jim Rosenhaus back with you at Progressive Field, downtown Cleveland, for Tribe Talk, another edition for you. Our hot stove edition's continuing. Great to have you with us this weekend as we talk baseball with you from the ballpark. Well, some sad news in the world of baseball last weekend, the passing of longtime Major League executive Hank Peters, who played a vital role in rebuilding the Indians and setting the groundwork for the Indians' dominance in the American League back in the mid-90s. At the time, he was the Tribe's president, and that was from 87 through 91, and then turned things over to John Hart as the general manager and Dan O'Dowd, his right-hand man, and they kept things going in that positive direction. And then, of course, once this ballpark opened here, things were pretty good for a long time back in the 90s. Bob DiBiasio was the PR director when Hank Peters was the team president back in 1987, first hired then. Of course, Peters had come over from the Baltimore Orioles, where he had been their general manager from 76 through 1987, a World Series in the mix there, a World Series championship in the mix, two appearances in the Fall Classic for the Orioles, at a time when free agency was taking over the game and they had to figure out some different ways to go about it. And certainly Hank Peters and the Orioles at that time, one of the dominant teams in the American League. But a long baseball career for Hank Peters. And Bobby D reflects on an outstanding baseball career, and really that passing of Hank Peters hit close to home for Bobby D because of some of the circumstances taking place in his career at the time that Hank Peters was hired by the Indians.
I look at Hank Peters from both a personal, a very personal way, and also professionally. In a personal way, I have to thank three gentlemen for allowing me to spend which will become my 37th year in Major League Baseball coming up here when the 2015 season gets underway. And that's Harry Jones and Joe Bick for my first stint as a member of the Cleveland Indians PR department in 1979. And then I got let go in June of 1986 after Mr. O'Neill passed away and Peter Bavese came in to as a consultant to run the team and fired about six or seven of us. And then I went down to Atlanta to become their PR chief for a year, and it was Hank who brought me back in 1988 after Dick Jacobs tabbed Hank as the president and GM after Dick purchased the team. So I owe it all to those three gentlemen, and specifically for this run from 1988 to now, I owe to Hank Peters and him and his want to bring me back to my hometown to be the PR chief of the Cleveland Indians. So on a personal level, I've always talked to Hank and, you know, expressed from my family our sincere thanks for allowing me to do this job in my hometown for the team that I've rooted for since I could open my eyes and actually understand what baseball was all about. From a professional standpoint, he was the man that truly laid the foundation for who we are today. I don't know if Dick Jacobs could have tabbed anybody better. A guy who really was able to tell Mr. Jacobs at that time that the way we had to build this franchise was through the farm system. It's why he left the first time. People may not know, but Hank was the farm director, the vice president of player development for the Cleveland Indians from 1966 through 71, I believe. And Vernon Stouffer wanted to slash his budget in half, and he said, you're going to ruin the foundation of this franchise for years to come. I can't be a part of that. I need to leave. And he ended up becoming the GM of the Baltimore Orioles, taking them to two World Series appearances. One they lost in 79 to the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates, and then they won in 83. And then he obviously joined us in November of 1987. So he laid the foundation for this new ballpark that we all enjoy. He modernized our baseball and business operations. And obviously it led to championships.
You mentioned the way he did it, through the farm system. Not only Baltimore, but also got some credit for some very good Oakland Athletics teams back at the turn from the late 60s to the early 70s. And he did it at a time, especially with Baltimore, when free agency was starting to come into play, yet he still felt the values of the farm system were most important.
And I think he felt that way by looking at the business of baseball and understanding middle markets compared to major markets, that middle markets just, it's such a risk to go after free agency, and it's that way today. It was the same back in the late 80s, and it's the same way today. What kind of risk you're taking as a middle market team giving one player so much money, and that player just happens to get injured or falls a little bit in their achievement in their performance, how that truly can impact your franchise. Where if you have great scouts, a great player development system in place, your feeder system is going to help you stay at a championship level for years to come. And Hank firmly believed that. And he got Dick Jacobs to understand that it was more important at the beginning of Mr. Jacobs' tenure as owner of the franchise to invest in the farm system more than going out and buying free agents.
Bob DiBiasio joining us, Indians vice president. We're talking about Hank Peters, who passed away last weekend. And Bobby D, you talk about farm system, obviously important to develop your own. But somewhere along the way, there always seems to be a key trade for a team that's able to turn the corner. And with Hank Peters, that key trade came several years before the wins kicked in for the Indians. But talk about the Joe Carter trade and how it took a little while and certainly some skillful wheeling and dealing on Hank Peters' part.
Well, Hank wanted Carlos in that trade, and they were not willing to give up Carlos. They didn't want to give up Sandy, to be honest, but they knew they were getting Joe Carter. So obviously Joe Carter, the big name at the winter meetings, I'll never forget us huddling in the suites and him just saying, no, I'll leave here. I'll leave these winter meetings, you know, with Joe Carter on our roster and see what other team may want him. But San Diego, we know you want him, and you're going to have to include Carlos Baerga. They already had agreed on Sandy Alomar Jr. and Chris James, the outfielder. They didn't want to give up this kid in the farm system, Carlos, who was in Double A, I think, at that time, who was just hitting the heck out of the ball. You know, they had he and Robbie Alomar, as the Padres did, as their middle infielders. But he just stuck to his guns, and that was the trade. Because not only was it the trade that symbolized what we were about to do, that, okay, we're going to take our hits here, guys. We are going to stand up and announce the fact that we're taking our hits. We're going to lose some games, but we're bringing some quality, talented players that we don't have in our own farm system. The next move that really solidified it was when Sandy and Carlos stood up and signed the multi-year deals as young players who committed to each other, their teammates, to the city and this organization. And that's what ended up vaulting us to having so much fun when we opened this building.
initial reaction from fans when Joe Carter's traded. Here's not only the Indians' best player, but one of the better all-around players in the American League at the time. What was the reaction here?
Not good. Obviously, it was another, here we go again. The best player on the team is leaving. Joe was the first Cleveland Indian to get 30 homers, 30 steals in one season. One of the most athletic players in the history of our franchise. And as you said, one of the top performers in all of baseball. And so it wasn't easy. But Hank had the ability to sit with the media and in a very calm manner explain to them why we had to do this. And people understood. And as we went forward and he kept adding more youngsters, as all of a sudden our farm system started producing the Jim Tomies and the Manny Ramirez's and the Charlie Nagy's, and you're adding later on John Hart's able to add the Kenny Loftons and the Omar Vizquel's to what Hank had provided as a foundation, is when we became, obviously a championship team.
Now, the winning at the major league level did not kick in until after he had left. What was the thinking here in terms of patience from the inside? Was there that feeling of confidence because he had done it with some other clubs?
Well, it was the inside. We all knew the money that was being spent on the farm system, that Hank truly was able to reach Dick Jacobs into an understanding that we had to pump a lot of money into our farm system. I mean, Hank would tell the story in 1988 when I came back. I asked him about the challenge, knowing what the Indians farm system was all about. I mean, you joined the Cleveland Indians back then as a rookie right out of the June draft and went to the short A season. A lot of those kids had to wear their own high school or college warm-up jackets. We didn't even have Indians dugout jackets for those kids. That's how badly the operation was being run. And Hank, it took a while for Hank to have an understanding that we're going to go and hire the best scouts, so it's going to take some money. We're going to steal them from other teams and pay them more. We're going to make sure we have an extra coach at every minor league level, which costs money. We're going to do the right thing for our athletes in both the strength and conditioning area and the nutrition area. Uniform and equipment was going to be upgraded. And that's multi-millions of dollars that it took. And Dick, was able to understand what Hank had to offer in making sure that this franchise was put on the right foundation. And so it really was a connection of two guys that happened to come together at the perfect time for this franchise. Mr. Jacobs owning it at the time that he did, and Hank Peters being the calm, patient man that really set the foundation in order. Because if you walked in here with a brand new owner and all of a sudden you spend wildly and forgot about the farm system, we would have burned and crashed. Was nice that the way things worked out, and Hank deserves so much credit for where we sit today.
That's Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio talking about the life and times and memories of Hank Peters, who passed away at the age of 90 last weekend. Stay with us. We'll have more to come as Tribe Talk continues on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. We rejoin you from Progressive Field, downtown Cleveland. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend. And don't forget, if you'd like to check us out on Twitter, you can do so at Indians Radio is the Twitter address. If you want to keep tabs on what's going on with our radio shows, and then as spring training gets going, we'll keep you filled in on broadcast times and schedules, and of course during the regular season, all of that good stuff coming your way throughout the year. So some good stuff on Twitter if you want to check it out, at Indians Radio. Great stuff for four of the greats of the game this week, as four new members of the Baseball Hall of Fame recognized, informed that they had been elected, and they'll be enshrined in Cooperstown this coming summer. John Smoltz, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Craig Biggio all notified that they had received 75% of the vote from the eligible voters in the Baseball Writers Association of America, so they will indeed be the class of 2015 in Cooperstown this summer. Great class it is, and we have some comments from all four from their press conferences earlier this week. We'll start with Randy Johnson, who said the idea of being in the Hall of Fame was really on the back burner for him since he completed his playing career.
It's not something that, since I've retired, that I thought about much. As some of you may know, I've kind of fallen back on a passion that I studied back in college, which is photography. I'm also a big USO supporter. I've been on 7 USO tours in the last 5 years. I recently just got back from Cuba and South Korea this year, or 2014. So I've been staying busy and been a little removed from the game by choice, simply because after 26 professional years, 4 years in the minor leagues and 22 in the major leagues, I really just felt like now was my opportunity to have a little bit of time for myself and travel with my family and do some of the things that I otherwise couldn't do because I didn't have the schedule or the time to do it, preparing for baseball. And I've really been enjoying my time away from the game and the people that I've met. Getting back into baseball mode these last couple weeks.
That is Randy Johnson. The big unit won 303 games during his major league career and finished his career second on the all-time list in strikeouts with 4,875 four ERA titles in his 22-year career, spent mainly with Seattle and Arizona, but he began his career with the old Montreal Expos and also saw some time with the Yankees, Houston, and the Giants, a career that saw him win 5 Cy Young Awards, 4 of those in the National League. Another quality pitcher, starting pitcher from that same era was Pedro Martinez, primarily with the Boston Red Sox, and that is where I think most Tribe fans will remember him best for some of the great games he had in pressure situations against the Indians. When it was all said and done for Pedro Martinez, 219 victories, an ERA under 3 runs a game, 3 Cy Young Awards, 2 with Boston, and then 1 with Montreal early in his career. And when he met with the Boston media earlier this week, he said the honor of being in the Hall of Fame, not only important for him, but also his home country, the Dominican Republic.
I would like to thank every one of you, to thank the voters, to thank every fan out there that throughout my 18 years and the minor league years, took the time to appreciate what we do, respect it, embrace it, go through the bad moments and good moments with us. The voters that today made me someone really, really, really special. It's something that I never expected while I was playing the game. I took each day personally and enjoyed it. But I never expected to be here today. If I say I dreamt about it, it's a lie. I never did. But I made sure that every day I lived like it was a dream because I was so proud to play ball every day. To all the voters, the class going in with me, thank you. All the teammates that I play with, I want to say thank you. But mostly, my family, Dominican Republic, America, for opening the doors for so many of us and giving us a chance to become who we are, who we become while we're here. For all the fans out there that actually opened their arms to embrace every one of us coming from a third world country, and treating us so well, giving us so many opportunities. thank you so much. The Baseball Hall of Fame, thank you for making the second Dominican welcome into the hall.
That's Pedro Martinez, enshrined in the Hall of Fame, along with Randy Johnson, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio this summer in Cooperstown. That should be quite a weekend, the class of 2015. We'll hear from Smoltz and Biggio when we come back after this on the Indians Radio Network. Jim Rosenhaus back with you on Tribe Talk from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to have you with us as it's another weekend in the off season, but those are starting to dwindle down a little bit. You get past New Year's and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel as we are less than a month away now from the equipment truck leaving for Goodyear. Pitchers and catchers to report in late February and the first full squad workout scheduled for February the 24th in Goodyear, Arizona. As we mentioned in our last segment, the Hall of Fame class of 2015 notified earlier this week as it was Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio elected to baseball's Hall of Fame. They'll be enshrined this summer in Cooperstown. For John Smoltz, well, he had a career that began as a starting pitcher, a dominant one at that, and then some time in the bullpen where he became a vital cog to Atlanta's hopes out of the pen, and then back to starting later on in his career. And as he reflected back on the last 24 hours before the announcement was made and he was notified that he had reached the Hall of Fame, he kind of summed up his thoughts on the anxieties that he had waiting for the call.
I guess for me it's something I never expected, but I truly will treat with the same dignity and integrity that I carried myself while I was here. So, as I said earlier, this morning and later today, I got a million calls, and one call I had to say is I'm not going to make the basketball game tonight, so I'm headed to New York. But other than that, this has really been an incredible experience. Yeah, well, as you know, I'm a pretty patient guy, so I was just sitting around. I ran some errands. I tried to treat it like a normal day. I really did. And I knew that, you know, there was going to be a TV crew coming in the house if it worked, if it happened. And, you know, I watched some TV. I was watching the network, you know, do their thing and watch Glavin and what he was doing. But I really honestly tried to prepare myself for whatever scenario. And when the phone call came, there was such a small time frame that I had to even tell anybody. You know, I hugged my wife, Catherine, and we were able to allow her to spread the news once 2 o'clock came. But then it was just literally locked down in TV world and the media and trying to make sure that, you know, I was able to deliver the same thing that hopefully someday in the next 3 or 4 months where I can gather all my thoughts.
That's John Smoltz, the former Atlanta Braves pitcher who won 213 games, ended up saving 154 in an outstanding major league career. And you know what? He was a pretty good hitting pitcher, too. He won a Silver Slugger Award during his time with Atlanta, a 21-year major league career. And the fourth member of the class of 2015 in the Hall played for 22 seasons, all with the Houston Astros. Craig Biggio going into the Hall of Fame, a member of the 3,000 hit club. And really, when you look back at his career and things that are impressive about it, not just the 3,000 plus base hits, but the fact that he started his career as a catcher and was having a fine career in that area, and the Astros said, you know what, we're going to move you out from behind the plate, and he became a very good second baseman, also played some center field as well, but one of the better all-around players and most consistent players of his era. And for Craig Biggio, when it came time to meet a very familiar Houston media because of his extensive time there, you're talking about someone who made Houston his home after growing up in the Northeast. He went to college and played his college ball at Seton Hall, became a first-round pick out of Seton Hall, and he talked about how he handled the wait to hear if he had made the Hall of Fame this year.
This is a very overwhelming and humbling experience to be up here in front of y'all today. I have to admit, this morning, last year when we came to this date, I woke up in the morning, I was fine, went about my business, and hopefully I got a phone call, and then the phone call never came. Well, this morning, it was about 4:30 in the morning I woke up, and I was sick as a dog, nervous as heck, and then all of a sudden I went back to bed at 7, then got up, did a little weightlifting, ran, then I couldn't settle down. I was too antsy, nervous, and excited. Then I went for a walk for a couple miles, then came back through BP to the boys, and then I got a phone call at noontime that will forever change my life, my family's life, but it was very, very overwhelming and very emotional. I don't really remember speaking to the people on the phone, other than I started crying. And then I asked them, I think it was the third person I ended up talking to, and I said, is this really real? You're not playing a joke on me or nothing, right? So, but anyway, today is a great day. You know, there's a lot of familiar faces in here. There's a lot of new faces in here. And being part of the Astro organization for 20 years, or going on 25, 26 years as far as being in front of part of the front office, I love this city, I love this town, I love this organization, and it's always been about that.
That's Craig Biggio, the former Houston Astro, 22 seasons in a Houston uniform, and now he will go into the Hall of Fame as a Houston Astro, along with Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, and John Smoltz. And that's going to put a lid on this week's edition of Tribe Talk. Hope you can join us again next week, as we'll be right back here at Progressive Field to bring you more baseball talk on the radio. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
With everyone, Indian Fever, you can be part of the fun. You're the winner at every game. That's where the excitement begins. So catch Indian Fever.
Be a believer
with the Cleveland Indians.
This ball is way back there, way back there, way back, baby, bye-bye.
Swing and a long drive, deep right field, forget about it, going, going, gone, goodbye.
Hey, get up, get out of here, gone.
Adios, pelota.
A swing and a miss, ball game.
Be a believer with the Cleveland Indians.
You've been listening to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.